The Drives podcast is presented by Disability Advantage Group. Need help applying for Social Security, disability benefits? One call does it all. Call Disability Advantage Group at 865-566-0800 or visit dag-us.com. Check.
All right. Here we go. Another stellar edition of The Drive underway. Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio. 105.7 FM, 1340 AM. FoxSportsKnoxville.com, your free Fan Run app. We have a podcast presented by Disability Advantage Group, a variety of ways for you to experience the show here this afternoon. And isn't it crazy?
What's crazy?
Isn't it crazy how the narrative changes in Tennessee recruiting so quickly and so completely?
It's like everybody's on Zoloft.
A month ago this time, it was just a total Chicken Little attitude.
Complete disaster.
It was, we don't get any commitments, other players are passing us by, Justin Rogers is going to Kentucky, the receiver we want went to Alabama, the top in-state prospect, Reggie Grimes, would rather go to Alabama, Keyshawn Lawrence is looking at Miami, even Tyler Barron, right up the street at Catholic, Cooper Mays, right up the street at Catholic, might not come to Tennessee. I mean, it was a it was a doom and gloom scenario if you look at the recruiting message boards and everything, which is probably a reason why you – I won't say you should never look at the recruiting message boards, but you should certainly take what you see there with a grain of salt.
Just you're walking down a bad alley if you do. It's all doom and gloom.
Only,
just prepare yourself.
Yeah. Now you fast forward a month, 5-6 weeks later, and all of a sudden – Jeremy Pruitt is rolling, steamrolling towards a potential top 10 class. If you look at it, the guys they're getting, the guys they are in on, the guys they are projected to get, suddenly it is a completely different narrative. In the span of about a month, the entire trajectory of this recruiting thing is flipped on its head. Now, I could hear Bear bellowing, taking time out of the summer of Bear.
He's got his talking about over there.
He's got his swim trunks on. By the way, I've never seen Bear in the swim trunks, but we can all agree those swim trunks are way too short, right? I mean, we know Bear. He's showing way too much thigh for a man of his age. That's all I'm saying.
Have you seen him in swim? You haven't
seen
him?
No, I just said, you know him.
I know.
Is there any way that those trunks are the appropriate length? No, of course not. Like, they're just
Is he a suntan lotion guy?
He better be.
I mean, he's just say screw it.
He's a fair skinned, slightly balding on top. Like he's got a. Anyway, I can hear him bellowing right now from the coast.
Recruiting doesn't matter. Just win some games.
Really put a lot of thought into that one, didn't you?
And it's like I can hear him saying that. I can hear some of our listeners saying that. And, again, we've talked about it a billion times. It's the chicken or the egg thing. You can't win the games until you recruit, and you can't recruit at an elite level until you win games because 4- and 5-star prospects, by and large, don't want to come play for a 6-6 type program. They want to play in the CBS game of the week as much as possible.
Yeah.
They want to go to Atlanta for the SEC championship. They want to play in the college football playoff, things Tennessee is not doing much here of late.
You got work to do. Like I was talking with somebody on campus. It's like, hey, look, once we start winning in October, November, recruits will start coming in towards the end of November and December.
Well, they're coming in now.
Well, I'm talking about rounding out the class.
Imagine how good it's going to be if we actually have a decent season.
Right.
Exceed expectations.
Got to hold on to them, though.
Coming into the year. So, that's the flip side of it. imagine, you know, if Tennessee lays an egg against BYU, Florida kicks our teeth in, Mississippi State comes in here, slaps us around, South Carolina, Missouri. Like, if we lose all those games, then you're probably not going to finish. You'll be lucky to hold on to what you have, let alone add to it moving forward.
They've got their work to do. They are out there. Now, look, coaches are on vacation right now. So don't expect anything. Coaches are taking 2.5-3 weeks off. Talked to one. He's like, I'm getting out of town. See ya. So, you know, don't expect much when it comes to it's a dead period as well.
Here's why I'm big on recruiting. Here's why I think Keyshawn Lawrence committing just about as soon as we got off the air yesterday a huge deal for Tennessee. Because I almost think, and this is going to sound crazy, but hear me out. I almost think that the recruiting is more important than the actual games.
Whoa, wait a minute.
And I know you got to, like, you play to win the game and all that stuff. But, you know, David Ubbin's going to join us here in about 20 minutes on the show. And he had a really interesting thought today on The Athletic. You know, it was a mailbag piece, and somebody asked him, you know, what does Tennessee have to do to get to 7-8 wins? And he went on. I'll let him explain it. But Tennessee is probably – we're not in the playoff discussion this year. We're not even in the SEC championship game discussion this year.
You wouldn't throw any money on that?
Yeah, I mean, you'd throw a ton of money on the fact Tennessee's not going to, what, make the SEC championship? I bet you $1,000 right now Tennessee's not going to make the SEC championship. I mean, you've already given $100 to Bear. I'll take it.
Why? No, that's not $100 going to Bear. Tennessee could go down to Florida and win that game. I'm not dumb enough to give you that. I will be – what about – okay, what about a bet?
$1,000. Tennessee not going to win the East.
What about second place?
No, because it's Georgia and everybody else.
$100 is Tennessee finishes second in the East.
I mean, I'm tempted, but I don't want to bankrupt you here, Trey.
Yeah, there's no bankrupting involved.
Tennessee's we're not in this conversation.
No,
we're not in the SEC championship conversation. We're not in the SEC East conversation. We're certainly not in the playoff conversation. That's basically what David's point was. Is listen, there's not a big difference between 8-4 and 6-6. Like, who cares at the end of the day? The thing is, coaching up these great recruits that you got last year's class. Okay. Signing a really good class this year, and it's all building towards something down the line. We've been at this place before very, very recently. Butch Jones signed top five classes in 2014 and 2015. And coming into the 2016 season, he was expected to roll. And people forget, but he did. We were 5-0 headed down to Texas A&M before the wheels fell off.
They didn't really fall off until the next week.
So they were at a situation where you've been here before.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of, okay, you can kind of see where this is going. I feel like this is going to follow the same trajectory it went from Butch Jones's tenure, where he came in, it was a train wreck the first year, made a little bit of improvement the second year, made a meaningless bowl game, won it. Then they took a big step in year three. Then it took another step in year four. Now, the thing is, once you get to that where you take the big step, year three, year four, can you keep it going? Can you get over the hump? Can you win at Texas A&M? Can you take care of business? Can you beat a South Carolina team that you should beat on the road in a hostile environment night game? Can you do those things? Butch Jones couldn't do it. He hit his ceiling. He peaked in 2015. 8-4, that's as good as that guy can do in the SEC. Jeremy Pruitt's he's following that same trajectory. He's recruiting at that 2014-2015 Butch Jones level. He's getting all these in-state guys. He's getting these guys committed. I think he's going to sign them and get them in here. What can he do with them? How far can he take it? Can he get it to that next level beyond 8-4 where you're winning 9 or 10 games? And then you are in the conversation to win the division and get to Atlanta. And once you get there, anything's possible. And once you get – you know, if you win that, obviously you're looking at a playoff appearance. That feels like it's way far down the road for Tennessee right now, and it is. but we're following that same trajectory. It feels like we're doing this, like we're just trying it again. We're trying the Butch Jones formula again of loading up with all the recruits. You do whatever you have to do to get them. It's just, okay, what's he going to do here in a year or two when he's got them?
Are you starting? Okay. So you're saying that Tennessee and the fact that they are recruiting the in-state, they are keeping some guys home, and the fact that I'm a little confused though in your 8-4, 6-6 mantra, because 6-6 looks not pleasant. 6-6, you end up in Birmingham or Memphis. 8-4, you're playing in a Florida bowl game, not on December 27th. There's a difference when it comes to recruiting. I mean,
a little bit. Yeah. I mean, there's a difference when it comes to recruiting, but from fan perception, like, you know, I just feel like in the day and age of the college football playoff, when we've taken these three bowl games every year and set them aside as the pinnacle, and Saban warned against this. I remember he most loudly was warning against this when the discussion of should we adopt the playoff was happening five plus years ago. He's like, you do this, it's going to trivialize all the other bowl games. Gator Bowl's not going to mean anything anymore. Citrus Bowl's not going to mean anything anymore. Like, those games that used to be on a higher tier above the Belk Bowl, the Music City Bowl, whatever, that not anymore. You're going to have the playoff and everything else. And he was right. That's what you've got. In my mind, now, a good recruiter, yes, they could sell it as like, oh, we were in the Gators Bowl. We played on New Year's Day. We were in the Tax Slayer Bowl. You know, we played Big Ten team on New Year's Day. But in the day and age of the college football playoff, does that really matter as much as it did before the playoff?
To a 17, 18-year-old kid, what are they going to look at more, 6-6 season or an 8-4 season? It's kind of cut and dry. I mean, it's a lot harder. In my eyes, it would be a lot. Okay, it depends on A, who you're beating. If you finish 6-6 with a loss to Missouri and Vanderbilt again, you throw that away.
Well, and that,
like, 6-6 doesn't matter. I don't care. I don't care who the hell you beat.
Well, and again, that's kind of what David was getting, and I'll let him state. You know, I'll let him speak for himself, state his own position. But the short of it, as I interpreted it, was, yeah, Liz, you could go 8-4, but if three of those losses are complete blowouts to Florida, Georgia, Alabama, I mean, they just stomp you the way they did last year, and you end the season getting beaten at home by two touchdowns to Vandy, or you get smoked at Missouri, you know, whatever, at Kentucky, whatever the case may be. Is that going to feel better than if you went 6-6 and you lost two more games? Say you lost at home to South Carolina and Mississippi State or BYU, you know, whatever six games you want. But you played Florida close in the swamp. Maybe you had the lead and you just lost it late. You went down to Alabama and gave them everything they asked for and more. Georgia came in here and left battered. They won the game but escaped. Maybe it took them overtime to do it. Like, you're bordering in moral victory territory, but, you know, I think there is a school of thought that you could say, hey, we're showing progress here. We're safe. That's what I mean when I say, what's the difference between 8-4 and 6-6? Me, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. I'm about the wins. I'll take the 8-4. Give me the extra wins. But I don't think it's a ridiculous notion to say that, you know, what's the difference between 8-6? You're not going to anything special anyway if the six losses are all close, and including against the quote-unquote creme de la creme of the league. There's something to be said for that.
Jeremy Pruitt goes 6-6 next year. Is this seat getting a little bit warm?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think you got to win some of those games in year three. But the truth is,
I think you have to win South Carolina, Mississippi State.
I mean, it's probably going to be hot year three anyway. This is SEC football, man. You don't get 10 years to rebuild a program anymore. Like, you better be. Most great coaches, We talked about Urban yesterday. You go look at his track record. Year two, he's always awesome. Year one is sometimes a struggle, but year two, he is always one of the top three or four teams in the country. Nick Saban went 6-6 his first year at Bama, 12-0 regular season the next year at Alabama. The elite coaches show it in year two. You better be showing something by year three. I don't care where you are, man, because that's just this day and age college football. You don't get 10 years like Johnny Majors did to turn things around anymore in the modern era. You just don't.
And first of all, Trey, you got to beat Vanderbilt.
I just said that.
I know. But you said the two big games are South Carolina and Mississippi State.
Well, yeah.
We can't beat Vanderbilt.
At home.
That's true. I think BYU is probably more important than both of those, though, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, starting off the season, if you lose to BYU, it's going to be a long
season. Over, yeah.
And again, say you go 8-4 and you just get drilled. Florida, Georgia, Bama just blow us out. But you win the other games. You're cruising along. You're 7-3 heading into that last game. Would it be 8-3? Yeah, 8-3 headed into your last game against Vanderbilt, like a chance to go. And then Vanderbilt comes in here and beat you. We talked about this before on the show. That can undo everything.
Yeah.
If you lose to Vanderbilt at home again for the fourth year in a row, ooh, that's going to leave a bad taste in people's mouths.
You can't start letting Vanderbilt be the same equivalent as Alabama and Auburn. Derek Mason has kept his job at Vanderbilt because he's beaten Tennessee. Yeah, he's had a decent year or two, but the main reason is he's beaten Tennessee.
Yeah, that's all he's living
off. The reason why Tuberville kept his job for so long in Auburn. It's because he went on a 6-game win streak against Alabama. Other than that, he'd have been out. You can't start making it be like where these coaches are keeping their jobs because they're beating Tennessee. It's going to be tough. It's going to add that. What makes Tennessee, is Tennessee on the same playing field as Missouri? That's a good question to ask.
Well, we're certainly closer to that than we are to Georgia and Alabama.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that right now. But, I mean, this gets back to you got to be able to walk before you can run. You got to be able to crawl before you can walk. And, like, I like it when Philip Fulmer is up there in front of the Board of Trustees last week saying, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, those are our peers. That's who we measure ourselves against. That's who we should measure ourselves against. That's who we used to measure ourselves against. That's who we want to measure ourselves against. But the simple fact of the matter is, and I'm not trying to be rude or, obnoxious to Tennessee fans, but this is just the truth, man. I'll always tell you the truth. The truth is, Missouri came in here and kicked the crap out of you in your own house last year. You went to Vanderbilt and were non-competitive. Now, you beat Kentucky at home, that's great. But, there's a reason you were an underdog in that game.
Truth is, you're going to be pissed off 3 or 4 times next year, and we'll see if Tennessee fans can hold on to the hope through those bad losses. There's going to be an ass-whipping somewhere in between next year. Probably 2. Like a straight-up butt-whipping.
You think so? Straight-up butt-whipping and
I do.
For the Vols?
I do. I think it's something where they hang in there tough in the first and then
– I mean, I'm expecting a beat down at Bama. Other than that, it depends what you consider a beat down.
20 points.
20 points. I would hope that we can keep it within 20 against Florida in the Swamp.
What? You hope you keep it within 20 against Florida? Why are you so high on Florida?
I don't think he is.
They won 10 games last year.
Okay, I get that.
Tennessee. We don't go down there and win.
I mean, they're playing. Yeah, I mean, they're playing in the Swamp. If we were playing at home, I'd probably have a little bit more confidence in that game. But I mean, they're just. I mean, you saw the game last year. they came in here and slapped us around. It wasn't very fun.
You just with the pieces that Tennessee is adding and the players getting better, I think it's closer in the Swamp than a lot of people are fearing. That's just straight up. I don't see Tennessee going down to Gainesville getting absolutely trounced. I don't. I mean, Florida, even Florida writers are not as hype on this team as years past with different regimes.
I don't know. Most of these preseason magazines I've seen have Florida as a top 10 team.
No. I get that. I've read those, and I understand that. But I'm talking about just in general, they're having a hard time. They understand, yeah, they saw 10 wins last year. But it's also, you know, I was talking to somebody the other night from GatorCountry.com. It's like, okay, yeah, everybody got excited for last year, but still having to pull up on the reins a little bit.
But
they still got Felipe Franks as their quarterback.
But here's the conversation. Again, we're having two different conversations. When we talk about who do you measure yourself against, who are your peers? And for Tennessee, you know, we're trying to beat Vanderbilt and Missouri. We're trying to get back. Like, Florida, their concerns that you're talking about, that is as it pertains to, can we beat Georgia this year? Can we beat Georgia and win the East, get to – they did beat LSU last year. Can we get to Atlanta? Like, we're not having that conversation here in Knoxville. I mean, hell, I hope we can beat Florida. But, I mean, if you're asking me right now, and I think I have seen the line that I saw was like 14.5.
For the Florida game?
And the Swamp, which to me.
I take those points.
Sounds about right.
Give them to me.
Sounds about right. All right, we've got the latest on the Carrie Blackshear sweepstakes, which is there is no latest.
I'm so tired of getting blown up about Blackshear.
Oh, come on, Trey. You got to buckle in for the long haul.
No, this guy's had 2 months to figure out where he's going to go to school.
Hey, man, it's a big decision. It's a big decision.
Not 2 months worth.
I can ride it out. I'm not tired of it. Maybe I haven't been following it as closely as some. But, hey, man, if he comes here, he comes here. Like I said yesterday, Tennessee has done everything they can to land Kerry Blackshear. They have made their pitch. They're willing to go to fairly extraordinary lengths to make it happen. They're willing to kick a guy off the team, basically, you know, after a full session of summer school, pretty late in the game. Like, they're doing what they have to do to land the kid. And
pink slip in the locker.
I mean, if Florida and if they come in and they're snag him, if he decides he wants to stay at Virginia Tech, I don't think that we're going to be sitting here and say, well, if Rick Barnes had done this, if Kim English had done that, you know, we would have landed him. I think they've done everything they can, man. And we'll know. He's going to, you know, this thing ain't going to drag on past 4th of July or anything.
Will you be comfortable knowing if he stays at Va Tech compared to going to Florida?
Yes, I'd rather him do that.
Okay.
I mean, if we're going to lose him, let's lose him to a team that's not in our league that we don't play.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Okay. I agree with that.
And plus, you could kind of tell yourself if you're like, you know, feeling rejected or something, you could kind of tell yourself, hey, you know what? He wanted to stay home. He had his friends on the team. They convinced him, like, good for him. Like, you know.
What if he comes out of nowhere and ends up at North Carolina or Duke?
Well, that would be shocking, obviously.
Yeah, you think?
So Tennessee gets Keyshawn Lawrence yesterday. We'll talk more about him. Big four-star safety, defensive back prospect from the mid-state, Nashville Ensworth High School, private school kid, real close to Tyler Barron, who played there last year, who's playing at Catholic here in Knoxville this year, a four-star defensive lineman. We see that domino effect maybe starting to take place with Cooper Mays in the boat, Keyshawn Lawrence now, who amongst these in-state ballyhooed prospects will be next.
This is going to be a conversation probably for the 4 o'clock hour. I've got to get used to these Tennessee State high school rules. How the hell are these kids transferring to these different high schools and being eligible to play? Like, I go back on it, Shamberger from Tennessee. He's from Theodore, Alabama. He's from 2 miles from where my parents' house is, okay? Mm-hmm. His senior year, he transfers to Colquitt County and goes and plays with Rush Probst.
Yeah.
He goes back to Theodore and graduates from high school there. How does this stuff happen?
I don't know, man. It's
like, we know the ins and outs, But it's a little weird.
The way things filter down and kids transfer high schools now, and then you hear about, and basketball is worse than football, where you find out, like, oh, this young man is playing at this such and such academy.
Down there, you're like, academy.
Oh, you're like, oh, that sounds very prestigious. And then you find out, like, it's not even a real school. They don't have an actual building. It's just like this collection of homeschooled kids that plays their games in a local church gym or something. But all these great players go there, and there's like all this shady stuff going
on. Sponsored by Adidas or Under Armour.
I don't know. I know for like Tyler Barron, his dad is on the Tennessee staff here in Knoxville and has been for a number of years, predating Jeremy Pruitt getting here. So he has, like, that kind of makes sense to me, I guess. It's like, okay, you were at school in Nashville, you come, you know, go to a private school in Knoxville, be closer to your dad. Like, I don't know that that's the exact reasoning for it, but on the outside looking in, that seems to make sense.
Well, you sold me, bud.
Well, we'll see if Jeremy Pruitt sells him, because that's what matters at the end of the day. We'll take a quick break. When we continue, David Ubben of The Athletic is going to join us to give us his perspective on Tennessee football. It is The Drive on a beautiful Tuesday afternoon in East Tennessee. It is Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio. All right, back here on The Drive, Fox Sports Knoxville. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be live at one of our favorite places, Old Ben Franklin Motors. Come on down, come on down. We'll have some piping hot Jets pizza for you. Also going to have a fat stack of Tennessee Smokies tickets if you want to take a 9-inning vacation. We're actually running out here. I've got, 20, 30 Smokies tickets are left. These are flex tickets, get you into any Tennessee Smokies home game. I was up there Sunday night, had a great time with family. You can too. Come check us out tomorrow, 3 to 6, 9711 Kingston Pike. Will be right across from Franklin Square, where the sign caught on fire about a month ago. I don't know if you guys saw that. The deals are so hot at Old Ben Franklin Motors. They are literally causing electronics to combust in that area, West Knoxville. So coming out, see us. We'll have some backyard burger coupons for you as well. Should be a lot of fun tomorrow at Old Ben Franklin Motors in West Knoxville. Let's go to the phone lines here and bring in David Ubben from The Athletic. David, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Doing good. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for jumping on here. I know you and Trey know each other a little bit. This is the first time we've spoken. David, I've followed your work. I really enjoyed it last year. I know this is your second year on the beat. Do you feel like you have a better handle just on the overall state of the program going into I feel like I'm interviewing a player here, year two, you know, you take the big jump going into year two?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think getting a better sense of the roster and having seen them, you know, up close and every snap multiple times for a full year plus practices, I think, you know, you can have a sense of the team in some ways, but you know, there's no substitute for experience. So seeing those guys, you know, for a full year and then in practice as well. I mean, having a feel for the team and really having a sense for what to expect and what all, you know, 80 to 100 guys actually bring is different. And I think pretty good shape for the ladder going into year two. So excited about it.
Well, it probably gives you a better basis to work with when people ask you for a prediction, which I know you probably get a lot. Trey and I were talking about your mailbag today, and you had a really interesting thought in, you know, people are asking you, like, what's the record going to be? And you had an interesting take on what's the difference between going 8-4 and 6-6 for Tennessee, and just kind of explain your thinking behind what you wrote today on The Athletic.
Yeah, I mean, I think, oddly enough, I think the losses are more important than the wins. And I think that was kind of the story of the 2018 season. You know, if you're competitive in every game and you go 6-6 and, you know, you don't necessarily get embarrassed by the Alabama and Georgia, even if you take, you know, a pretty solid thumping. But if you're, you know, in the game and competitive in the fourth quarter against, you know, the Mississippi States and the South Carolinas and the Vanderbilts and Missouris, I think that feels markedly different than if you go 7-5 and you get thumped, you know, four out of those five games like Tennessee did last year, where, you know, they lose seven games, but South Carolina is basically the only loss that maybe could have gone another way. They were going to lose all six of those games. They lost them all by, I think it was 23 points or more. And so I think that's the goal for Tennessee in 2019 is not a number, whether it's 6 wins, 7 wins, or 8 wins. I think you absolutely – I'll couch that by saying you absolutely have to get to a bowl game. But I don't think that 6 wins and 8 wins is that much different. But I think how you lose when you lose is a huge part of how 2019 will be graded by fans and how the year will be remembered in the long run.
There are so many swing games on the schedule, and everybody's talking about the BYU game, and rightfully so. Mississippi State's another huge one people are talking about. South Carolina, Tennessee has yet to beat Will Muschamp in anything. But that Vanderbilt game, to me, is so important because even if you go 8-4, and you lose, and even just like you're talking about, close losses to Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and there's a lot of like, okay, you know, Tennessee's definitely taking another step. If you're 7-3 going into that last game, and I know this is a big hypothetical, but you lose to Vanderbilt to go 8-4, like to me, that takes away all the progress, at least from a narrative standpoint, that you quote-unquote made in 2019. You got to beat Vandy at home this year.
Yeah, you're right, but I also, in the same breath, it's kind of unfair a little bit because, you know, when people say Vandy, for one, that's an in-state opponent, and for two, the history makes Tennessee fans want to shrug that game off. But in the same breath, I think Vandy's going to be pretty good this year. They have a lot of pieces, and they just need to replace the quarterback spot. But they're going to have, you know, in terms of the triplets of the on offense, you know, they're going to have the ability to score points. And I don't know that Tennessee's going to be able to do that. So you're right, but also, like, Vanderbilt is not going to be a pushover for sure. I don't know that they're a bowl team, but, like, they're going to be respectable. They're going to be a tough out for some people. So, yeah, it's that's kind of the situation that Tennessee finds itself in. It's that, you know, across the SEC, you know, last year, besides Arkansas, nobody was an easy win. Everything was difficult. And Tennessee didn't have last year, won't really have this year, much of a margin for error. If you play poorly, you can lose to anyone. And if you play really well, you can probably beat 2/3 of the league, maybe 3/4 of the league. If you're Tennessee, where they were last year, so the margin of error is pretty small, and they're going to be in that position again in 2019.
David, when you look at the guys that are coming on camp, the enrollees that got here, you know, during the first summer session, and where we stand at now with players working out, you know, you got, you know, leaders like Juwan Jennings who's sidelined right now with a knee injury and getting stuff worked on, but you have, you know, you also had the leaders that have been there around there for a while, but. My question to you is, which, even a couple of these guys, besides Darnell Wright and Wanye Morris, who's going to step up for Tennessee, these new guys, even if it's a JUCO, for them to be able to come out of the gates in 2019 season to be able to try to make a stamp on it?
I mean, I think I'd probably start that list with Darrell Middleton. I think he's got to give them something. You know, he might not need to be a starter or come in there, but I think he needs to offer them kind of what Emmett Gooden did a year ago, where when you've got to spell your first, you know, guys on the defensive line, there can't be much of a drop-off. So I'd probably start there. You know, I'm curious to see what Jackson Lampley can provide if he can crack the rotation. Roman Harrison, I think, is another guy on the outside as an edge rusher, I think, can have an immediate impact there. You know, Savion Williams, you know, he might end up starting at one of those defensive line spots. You know, he's pretty versatile. I think, you know, he probably plays a little bit more in the nose tackle spot, but I think he's, you know, physically ready. I'll be curious to see what they get out of Elijah Simmons, who, you know, I think certainly they'd like to see him, you know, get his conditioning a little bit better and see how many snaps he can give you in a game. But I mean, the lines are just the biggest thing right now, and I think if you're looking, I'd probably point to those guys in terms of the guys who showed up this summer. That can make an impact. You know, like I said, go with Middleton, Simmons, Savion Williams, Roman Harrison, and probably Jackson Lampley.
Looking at the recruiting that Tennessee's done, and you've got guys like Ansley and Niedermeyer and Martin, how compared to the last couple of years? I know you weren't around during the Butch era, but I'm sure you've been caught up on it. When you look at the recruiters that they have on campus now, how much big of an addition was that? And I guess the better question is, would Tennessee be getting these guys right now if they didn't have like folks like Ansley or Martin or even Niedermeyer? Would they be getting the same type of talent that they're reeling in?
I mean, I don't know.
I know it's a weird question. I know it's a weird question. I just you look at the additions.
I mean, probably not, but I think you get. I think that's a question that I don't even think you can answer this year because I think every staff at a big program like Tennessee or like like Jimbo Fisher at A&M or Kirby at Georgia, you kind of get the year one bump where you're like selling your vision and say, hey, come be a part of this, come be a part of this. And so the 2019 class was probably always going to be great, and it's been a little slower in 2020. And so now is sort of where it gets a little bit tougher. As you know, you're still selling a vision, but there's a lot more tangible results on the field that your vision is becoming a little bit more of a reality. And so I think we'll find the answers to those questions, in the years in the next year or so.
How do you think Jeremy Pruitt has done from this time last summer to where we are now? And look, let's not act like we get to talk to Jeremy Pruitt every month, but how do you think he's done perception-wise of trying to build up a program? And I guess a better way to put it is year one jitters out of the way, first summer. Now we're into the second summer. Is he the type of guy that's going to be able to lead this program in 2019 into – whatever success they think is right? You know, Phillip said it the other night at that board of trustee meeting, hey, you know what? You know, we need 6, 7, 8 wins. So he's not setting the bar very high. Is that something Jeremy Pruitt in your eyes can reach?
I mean, he can. I think I'd still, you know, if you ask me long term, is Jeremy Pruitt the answer for Tennessee? Is he the guy that's going to get Tennessee, you know, into the playoff? I think that's definitely, I'd give him an incomplete at this point. I think you saw in year one some good indicators for future success. I think you also saw, you know, a little bit of questionable stuff, you know, with the meddling and spreading himself a little too thin. I think he's made moves to try and fix that in year two. Does that stick when, things get a little heated? The first time you give up 40 in the season, or the first time you don't come out and play very well, you know, we'll see. But I think he did a nice job of assessing what was what were some of the issues in year one and try to fix those in year two, you know, but do your fixes help? You know, you're paying a lot of money for coordinators. Do you let Derek Ansley still call your defense, you know, in the middle of the season? Is Jim Chaney, you know, you're certainly overpaid for him, but that's what you're gonna have to do at this point in the state of your program. Is he a guy that makes an impact, that makes it worth overpaying for him? These are questions that you know, he saw some things and tried to fix them. That's a nice step, but do those fixes work? You know, we'll see. So I think at this point, you know, projecting Jeremy Pruitt's future at Tennessee is a little bit of a Rorschach test, in that you can kind of see what you want to see. There's plenty of evidence to both sides of that argument at this point.
Ubben, what's next on the travel itinerary for Mr. David Ubben? You know, I mean, we get these we get these great articles, and I'll text you every now and then, and you'll be out in God knows where in the middle of nowhere. anything you can give up a little bit, or is this kind of a hidden secret?
I spent most of my summer working on non-Tennessee related projects, so there's been some interesting travel lately, but we've got a bunch of stuff cooking this summer at The Athletic, and nothing too imminent, I don't think. I'm scratching my head for what else we have on the back burner. But
I'm surprised you didn't go to Italy to get that Art Browse interview, to be honest with you.
nothing too spicy in terms of just pure Tennessee stuff in terms of travel. But we'll see. There's some other Tennessee things cooking that I think fans will appreciate.
Hey, David, wrapping up, enjoyed the piece and caused a bit of a stir with Gary Patterson, where he was telling about the story how he almost took the Tennessee job a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that was one of the non-Tennessee-related projects that I just happened upon a Tennessee story in the middle of it. But, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're everywhere. You'd be up there You could be out in the middle of Hawaii just trying to get an R&R, and you'll stumble upon a long-lost cousin of Johnny Majors or something that'll take you down a hole. How did Gary Patterson, speaking of Pruitt, like, you compare and contrast those two? I know Patterson's been at it much longer, but he seems like a guy who's really comfortable in his own skin, as opposed to a young coach who's still trying to figure out exactly what he's doing in Jeremy Pruitt.
Yeah, I mean, Gary's run his program the way he wants to run his program for so long, and even when the results aren't necessarily there, you know, he does the same thing every year, and it's remarkably consistent. And so even when they have a 6-win season or a 4-win season, he trusts his process. He doesn't have to doubt himself, and I think he has a situation at TCU where that trust in himself isn't just, you know, from himself. It's from the administration, because they've seen it too, and that's the kind of capital that he's built up there, and it's one of the many reasons why he'll never leave there now. There was kind of that 3-year window from 2007 to 2009 where, you know, he took a lot of calls from Nebraska and Auburn and Tennessee, and the calls have been less frequent because he just doesn't have a whole lot of interest in leaving. And you know, I think what does Tennessee look like if they hire Gary Patterson instead of so-called dream job? But regardless of what you think, Gary would not be significantly better than it was, you know, with the other strategy that Tennessee had, the bold strategy of three coaches in a decade, which always works out so well for everyone. I think it's one of those big what ifs, not only in college or in Tennessee, but in college football, because you think about the way that college football is shaped and the status of TCU, you know, winning its way into a major conference. I mean, and then Tennessee dropping and the SEC East, you know, going through a rough period. I mean, I think literally Tennessee deciding not to hire Gary Patterson reshaped all of college football, which is, you know, pretty fascinating. I mean, you don't have to go too far in the college football realm before, you know, the butterfly effect offers some pretty intriguing what ifs, and Gary Patterson's a big one.
No doubt about it. David, appreciate your time. He's at David Ubben on Twitter. He works for The Athletic. Appreciate you jumping on with us.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Thanks, bud.
David Ubben making his presence felt this afternoon here on The Drive. Trey, what did you learn?
I learned that expectations at Tennessee for somebody that I've known David, you know, for a year now, and it's crazy that we had further friendship that we didn't know about years ago. His perception coming from the Big 12 to the SEC with Tennessee, I'm starting to see him come around a little bit more, especially with the outlooks for the Volunteers compared to where he was last year when Pruitt first took the job, if that makes sense. Because he was coming from that, you know, that high offense, you know, defensive type style, even with Gary Patterson, and you get to Tennessee, and it's not the hottest commodity anymore. And to see his perception starting to change a little bit is interesting. But I will say this, and me and David talk about this a lot: we don't get a lot to build upon. We don't get to talk to the coaches and the
no.
and Jeremy. I mean, I don't. You know,
I feel like it's that way everywhere.
No, though. It is, but a lot of places have gotten better at it at times. And I think Tennessee is still behind the times a little bit. And I think that
are they behind the times or are they ahead of the times? Because behind the times, when that's why I don't go over there to and talk to, like, when I was doing that, when I was covering practices and stuff like that. Young folks can't believe this, but they had a set of bleachers. And this one, Tennessee was good. This is like late 90s, early 2000s. They had a set of bleachers over there on the practice field. And you could walk in there and watch the entire practice. You could come as early as you want, stay as late as you want.
God, I've heard those
stories. Could talk to, if you wanted to talk to John Chavis or Randy Sanders, or you just pull them aside, stick a microphone in their face, ask them how they feel, and they would talk to you.
Jeez.
And I understand, like, you know, at that time there were probably 12, you know, 15 people, I guess, who would go over there. And now that number's like 20 to 30. And it's, you know, it's a lot more demanding and all that
stuff.
It takes
more time to park than it does we get to view the practice.
Yeah, but I.
And that's not a knock. That's just reality.
But isn't that's the way it is at Alabama, for sure. That's the way it was here. Yeah. I mean, it's not any better or worse than it was under Butch Jones.
Florida gets about 40 minutes per practice.
Yeah.
I know Kirby Smart's kind of lightened up a little bit. I know Muschamp has. Everything just got to be a total secret for things that don't need to be a secret.
Yeah.
You know that story that happened last week or 2 weeks ago that wanted to be a secret by the university? Yeah, you know it. The one I told you. I'm just saying, you know what I'm talking about? That type of thing, that's pushing it a little bit when it comes to college football nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a paranoid culture.
And that's – perfect word, Russell, perfect word. It's paranoid from what's going to get out to Baton Rouge or to Tuscaloosa or even to Nashville. That's the problem nowadays. And we can talk about this, too, on the other side. It's just a lot of paranoia coming from college football programs because they know how much is at risk.
I don't know that Tennessee fans care at this point. I don't know if they want to know at the end. They're like, Bear, just win some games. I don't want to know who our second-string defensive tackle is. I'm pretty sure he's not very good because we went 5-7 last year and 4-8 the year before that.
Recruiting.
But when they get good, they're going to want to know.
Recruiting stuff is bigger than game stuff nowadays. That's the interesting part, if that makes sense.
All right, stay with us. It's The Drive here on Fox Sports Knoxville. We'll open up the phone lines here. 865-546-8200 is your number if you want to jump in. 546-8200. Back with more. All right, back here on The Drive. It's Fox Sports Knoxville rambling along on your Tuesday afternoon edition of the show. I want to thank David Ubbin of The Athletic for joining us. Coming up here in hour number two, we're going to visit with Joe Rexrode of the Tennessean in Nashville, and he, of course, is covering Vanderbilt in Omaha. They lose game one of the College World Series to Michigan last night, and he had an interesting piece. This is an interesting topic. I don't know. I find it interesting. Maybe I'm the only one. But for years, people have wondered, why is Vanderbilt so good in baseball? And one of the theories to explain that, and some people say it's a conspiracy theory, it's not that big. And some people say, no, it's 100% true, and it's the only reason that they're so good in baseball. And the theory is that they somehow, some way, through need-based scholarships, are able to give more scholarship money to their baseball roster than other schools like Tennessee, Alabama, Florida, whoever. And you only get 11.5 total scholarships in baseball due to Title IX restrictions, and you have to divvy those up. So most college baseball players are not on a full scholarship. They're on half a scholarship or a fourth of a scholarship or 66% scholarship, you know, whatever. That's up to Tony Vitello, whoever, to divvy up those scholarship dollars. But there's been this debate out there. Can Vanderbilt skirt those rules because of their situation with the need-based thing? And I've had a million different people give me a million different explanations as to how it works. So Joe Rexrode is going to give me the, you know, 1 million-second explanation as to how that works. And he wrote an interesting piece about it, The Tennessean Today, if you want to go read that. Stay with us. Hour number two of The Drive. Parker will have the top four at four coming up next right here on Fan Run Radio.